8 a.m. having arrived, I'm going to call the tax committee to order, and we do have a quorum. And so before we start, there are minutes here. If anyone would care to move the March 7th, 2019 minutes. Representative Les Lagard moves approval of the March 7th, 2019 minutes. Any comments, discussion on those? If not, I'm going to call for the vote on the March 7th, 2019 minutes. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. The motion does prevail. The minutes are approved. Also, members in your packets, there are bills that were referred to the Property and Local Tax Division. So if you can, those are in your folders for your review. So members, today, we have the governor's tax bill. And so at this point, I would like to move House File 2125 for possible inclusion into the tax omnibus bill. And I am very pleased to be able to carry the governor's tax bill, and I would like to commend Governor Walz for his leadership in putting together a tax bill that sets the foundation for some really key investments that will improve our quality of life and move our economy forward. When we had the forecast come out a couple of weeks ago, there were two things that I really took note of, and I think a lot of people took note of. And one was that we have a slowing economy, where we've been averaging about 42,000 new jobs from 2012 to 2017. That was only about 50% of that in 2018, about 21,000 new jobs. And one of the main reasons for that was a very tight labor market, where we have more job vacancies than people who are unemployed. And for the first time since at least 2001, in both the metro area and in the rural area, we had more people unemployed than jobs available. Or I should say we had more vacancies than we had unemployed. And I think it was a factor of 0.5 in the metro and 0.7 in the rural areas. And so as our demographer and others talk about, what we need to do is increase productivity, but also retain and attract working families. A second thing that came out of the forecast was that we have a budget deficit into the future. We have a budget deficit. So into the next biennium, we have a deficit, which means we cannot add one new dime of ongoing revenue in this session for education or for nursing homes or for public safety without creating some revenue. Those are the facts. And outside of the forecast also is, as far as our economy, for the last 5 years, farm income has gone down, according to the University of Minnesota Extension Service. And the new report will come out in a couple of weeks, and I'm probably going to assume you're going to see a sixth straight year of farm income going down. The farm economy is really struggling. And so with Governor Walz's leadership, he addresses these issues with the tax bill, which allows for important investments. So you're going to see almost $900 million of investments in education, E-12 and higher education, to get to creating the world's best workforce and increase that productivity. For working families, he has in the tax bill about $100 million for working family credit. He has $170 million for housing, about $44 million for increasing access to childcare. All things that are going to help to attract and retain working families. There's $20 million of cuts to senior citizens, cuts to the Social Security taxes to senior citizens, not cuts to seniors, of course. Farmers, the Section 179 full expensing. There's a buffer credit there. For communities, huge investments in local government aid and county program aid. There's $70 million in broadband. So this tax bill that we're going to be talking about today that Governor Walz and Commissioner Bowerly has put together is going to set the foundation for those very important investments that are going to move our state forward. And members, we have a deficit, as I mentioned, which means we could sit here with the status quo, but we know that there is no such thing as the status quo. You're either moving forward or backwards. And this tax bill that Governor Walz has put together moves us forward. It will help move forward our senior citizens and our economy and our working families and our farmers, and provides that jump start that I think is really important. So today we're going to turn this over then to Commissioner Bowerly and Ms. Bears. And what I would like you to do is just, I know there's a couple amendments we have to do before we go further, and we'll do that and explain. But I'd like you to lay this out. Members, I would like all the members to wait for comments and questions until the presentation is complete. We'll have plenty of time for that. And if we need tomorrow, we've got tomorrow to do that also. So with that, Commissioner Bowerly, thank you so much for being here. And welcome, and please state your name and present, and then we'll do a couple of amendments.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Cynthia Bowerly. I am the Commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Revenue, and with me this morning is Joanna Bears, our Legislative Director. We're pleased to be with you this morning to present House File 2125, and thank you, Mr. Chair and other members of the committee, for authoring this bill. This is the governor's tax bill, which is, of course, a component of the larger budget that the governor released just a few weeks ago. Before we dig into the budget, I would like to just remind the committee of our mission, vision, and values at the Minnesota Department of Revenue, because these characteristics of the department are important as we think about the customers who are being served by this tax bill. So our mission is working together to fund Minnesota's future, and together really is the most important word in that mission. And when we say together, we don't just mean the talented employees at the Department of Revenue, but we think of our partners in this work, including CPAs, tax preparers, the Bar Association, and volunteer income tax providers who all help Minnesotans meet their obligations under Minnesota's law so that we can use that revenue collectively as the governor proposes and as you all will continue to discuss this session to fund Minnesota's future, to ensure that our economy is growing and vibrant as we move forward. We do this work with our vision that everyone reports, pays, and receives the right amount, no more, no less. That is a very precise statement. And an important piece of this is the receives part, where we make sure that Minnesotans have access to the valuable credits that are available under Minnesota law, some of which we propose to expand in this bill. And we do all of this work guided by our values of integrity, respect, excellence, and accountability. And we want to make sure that, again, all of our taxpayers in Minnesota, all of our customers of the Minnesota Department of Revenue, are served in a high-quality fashion that helps them meet their obligations under the law. And we do have administer a number of different taxes at the Department of Revenue, some of which are very well known, individual income tax, for example, but we also administer mineral taxes and a dry cleaner fee. So there are over 28 statutes that the department is responsible for administering, and we want to make sure that our customers have everything they need to meet their obligations under these two dozen laws. Our customers are varied. They range from the 2.9 million individual income tax filers. And those filers might be individuals who use a professional to help them prepare their taxes. They might be a first-time filer, maybe a young person with their first job and for the first time has obligations to file and pay their taxes, or a family who is looking to receive that earned income tax credit at the federal level and the working family credit here in Minnesota. We serve all of Minnesota's tax professionals. We serve you not only in providing information about these policies, but the revenue estimates that you rely on as you hear bills. Those are, of course, produced by the department's research division and the property tax research division. We serve military members, seniors, and farmers. We serve the over 800,000 Minnesotans who receive property tax refunds each year, for whether they're homeowners or renters or live in mobile homes or even in nursing homes. 87 counties are also our customers, including the 800 licensed property tax assessors who serve Minnesotans across the state and administer our state's property tax code. The Board of Assessors is housed at the Minnesota Department of Revenue and helps ensure the licensure and training of all of those property tax assessors who have such an important job and an important role in all of our lives as they establish the valuations for our property. Over 400,000 businesses are active in our tax system. They are registered in our electronic file and pay system, and over 160,000 businesses remit tax. For these business customers, we know that it is important to make sure that we are engaging with them in a way that makes sense for them. And so we use technology to make sure that they can go ahead and access their account with us at any time of the day or night. It is a secure system with two-factor identification, so it's just like accessing your bank account where you have to verify your identity when you do that to make sure that it's secure. We work hard when we do are doing our audit work to use technology to minimize the time that we are spending in any individual business, and it can do that work, again, at whatever time is most convenient for that business. We want to take a moment to talk about the 2018 filing season. The filing season opened on January 28th of 2019. You're not late yet, but I want you to know that over a million Minnesotans have filed their income tax returns, and we've sent out over 600,000 refunds. As you know, this year our code is disconnected from the federal code, and so we worked over the summer and fall to make sure that our forms and systems would be updated for this year's filing season, and we have successfully done that. We work closely with vendors throughout the interim, and then during filing season, if we see any issues, we work with them closely to get any issues corrected for customers as quickly as possible. So with that sort of overview, a reminder of how we turn policy in our that is contained in our tax code into reality for our taxpaying customers, we want to turn to Governor Walz's budget.
So thank you, Commissioner. I think at this time, if we could do take the amendments up with that. So I'm going to move the A19-0168 amendment at this time. And Ms. Bears, you're going to explain that. If you would please state your name and welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Joanna Bears. I'm the legislative director for the Minnesota Department of Revenue. This amendment amends Article 2, Section 9 to correct thresholds for working family credit. It deletes $14,600 and inserts $19,600. It also amends Article 3, Section 4 to correct sales tax references in the qualified data centers. It deletes paragraph C and inserts clause 3. And then amends Article 6, Section 2 and 3 to correct estate exclusion amount. Deletes $2.8 million and inserts $2.7 million. These are just drafting errors that were noticed after it was introduced.
Thank you very much. Any questions or discussion on the A19-0168 amendment? Not, I'm going to call for the vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay.
Nay.
The motion does prevail. The amendment is adopted. Members, we also have a second amendment, so I'm going to move the A19-0182 amendment. Ms. Ferris, if you could explain the amendment.
Is it going anywhere?
This amendment is also to correct some drafting errors. It amends Article 1 with effective dates for provisions dealing with repatriated foreign income. It deletes 2016 and inserts 2015. It amends Article 1, Section 31 to correct standard deduction amount. It deletes 13,000 and inserts 13,300. And it amends Article 1, Section 31 to correct indexing base amount. Deletes 2018, inserts 2019, deletes 2017, and inserts 2018. It also deletes rounded and inserts down. And then it amends Article 1, Section 37 to correct reference to Internal Revenue Code selection by deleting 29E3 and inserts 529E3. And then deletes 2016 and inserts 2015.
Thank you very much. Any comments, questions on that? If not, I'm going to call for the vote on A190182 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. Motion does prevail. The amendment is adopted. All right. Thank you very much, Commissioner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and we appreciate the opportunity to correct those drafting errors and get the bill as we all intend it to be. As I mentioned, the House file is a part of Governor Walz's overall budget, and these pieces really do fit importantly together. As you mentioned, Mr. Chairman, the investments that we're able to make are in part because of the tax bill and the approach it takes, particularly with respect to business activity conformity. The governor's budget is based on three priorities: education, health care, and community prosperity. The budget makes hard choices to invest in the people of Minnesota while maintaining fiscal stability. The governor's priorities around education include increasing the basic formula for state funding to help close the funding gap in K-12. And of course, the basic formula for schools is the most flexible dollars that the state provides to school districts across the state, allowing for those local decisions to be made with this funding. It invests over almost $60 million in early childhood education and increases special aid funding to help close the gap between what school districts pay for providing these services and what the state and federal funding that they receive. And finally, it also increases the state grant program to provide financial aid for students pursuing higher education in our colleges and universities. And this part is particularly important as we think about the workforce needs that our businesses have identified for us. Another main priority is health care. The governor's priorities around health care include extending low-cost health insurance coverage to farmers, small business owners, and entrepreneurs. One part of this plan is providing a state-based health insurance tax credit to ensure that enrollees pay no more than approximately 10% of their income on health care. This is aimed at that individual market that we know has been challenging for Minnesotans across the state. And also this plan includes leveraging state purchasing power to lower prescription drug prices, increase transparency, and ensure access to comprehensive drug coverage statewide. Maintaining the healthcare access fund is imperative by repealing the sunset of the provider tax. Repealing the sunset of the provider tax maintains essential health programs for thousands of Minnesotans, including health coverage through Minnesota Care and Medical Assistance Programs. And funding from the Healthcare Access Fund will support the new premium subsidy and the state-based health insurance tax credit, a new program to help target Minnesotans who currently pay full price for their health insurance on that individual market. The governor's third priority in the budget is community prosperity, and this is really focusing on communities across the state and the important needs that families across the state are facing. So it expands access to the child care assistance program, raising rates paid to providers, and improves stability for children in that program. It also makes investments in housing, and we know we've all heard about the housing needs across the state of Minnesota. The governor's budget and bonding proposals will direct $170 million to the preservation of existing affordable housing and create new homes for Minnesotans across all income levels and across all areas of the state. And Mr. Chairman and members, access to robust broadband is now recognized as a critical factor in the economic and social sustainability of all Minnesota's communities across the state. And the governor's budget recommends $70 million in the biennium for border-to-border broadband. This funding commitment will build on several years of public and private investments in the broadband infrastructure in underserved areas of the state, helping more than 193,000 homes and businesses, primarily in rural areas, gain access to reliable broadband internet. We know that this is an important as infrastructure as roads and bridges are to continuing to build our businesses across the state of Minnesota. Turning specifically to the governor's tax bill, the governor's budget provides tax relief to families and farmers in the form of increased credits, cuts to Social Security taxes, and increases to our local city and county program aids, and valuable tax savings for equipment purchases for Minnesota's farmers and small businesses. Members, we will move through the bill largely by article, and in a couple of places I will let you know if we are going a little bit out of order. So first, Article 1 deals with the federal response to the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act that was, of course, passed in 2017. The budget for individuals does not conform with many of the federal changes made to individual income tax at the federal level. Instead, the governor's budget changes the starting point for Minnesota taxable income to FAGI instead of federal taxable income or federal FTI, beginning with tax year 19. This new starting point gives Minnesota the ability to determine how itemized and standard deductions and exemptions meet Minnesota's needs. The personal independent exemptions are set at the current federal amounts before the changes made by the federal tax bill. $4,250 for each taxpayer spouse and dependents, and the standard deduction is set at the current federal amounts of $1,300 for married family jointly, $9,750,000 for head of household, or $6,650 for all other filers. Amounts for the exemptions and deductions will be adjusted for inflation as we move forward. The proposal in the governor's budget maintains Minnesota's itemized deductions, and by moving us to AGI, adjusted gross income, we'll be able to maintain the valuable benefits that thousands of Minnesotans take advantage of each year, including itemized deductions that used to be available at the federal level are no longer currently available. These include personal casualty loss deductions. The bill maintains the deduction for personal casualty losses or losses not connected with a trade or business. This is important relief for taxpayers who experience loss from a fire or storm damage, as well as theft. The federal change limits losses to only those incurred as a result of federally declared disasters, and we know that Minnesotans can experience these losses outside of those circumstances as well. The bill would retain the unreimbursed employee expenses and other miscellaneous expenses that were previously available under federal law. It maintains this deduction when those expenses exceed 2% of taxpayers' AGI. The deduction for these types of employee business expenses provide relief for employees who incur costs in performing their jobs, such as the required purchase of uniforms, travel expenses, union dues and licenses, perhaps lodging and other work-related expenses. And the bill maintains the deduction for state and local real estate, real and personal property taxes paid without imposing the federal $10,000 self cap. The bill also conforms with itemized deductions that continues to conform with itemized deductions that are allowed at the federal level. For example, the home mortgage interest deduction. The bill allows for the deduction of interest paid on home mortgages used to acquire, construct, or substantially improve a home. The bill also allows the charitable contribution deduction to continue. The bill maintains Minnesota's current treatment of several other individual items that are allowed regardless of whether the taxpayers elect to itemize the deductions. It provides charitable contributions for non-itemizers, allows a subtraction for moving expenses that are paid or incurred in connection with a new job, and it maintains our current treatment of the 529 plans that are available under law. Mr. Chairman and members, we're going to move to a couple of items in Article 2 just as we continue to talk about the impact on individual taxpayers. The first is subtraction for Social Security income. In 2017, in Minnesota law, subtraction was put into place for Social Security income. This change would allow a larger subtraction, including for married joint filers, moving that subtraction from $4,700 to $6,000. It makes some adjustments to the threshold phase out beginning so that the same amount of the increased number of taxpayers will have access to this benefit, and keeping the phase out threshold at the same level for the full phase out. You can see on your handout and on the screen the other levels for other types of filers. The proposal is intended to ensure that over 200,000 returns would receive additional tax relief in 2019. No taxpayers will have a tax increase as a result of these changes. And when this is put in place, nearly 56% of Minnesotan seniors would pay no tax on their Social Security benefits under the proposal. Another change that is housed in Article 2 but relates to individual income tax filers is the working family credit. This is an important credit in Minnesota. It's the corollary to the federal EITC and is an important anti-poverty tool that has been proven to be successful across the state and around the country. The working family credit has two changes proposed in this bill. It provides over $100 million in tax relief for these working families. The first expands the credit for families with three or more children. Under current law, having more than two children doesn't give you access to any larger amount of the credit. And, of course, we all know that having additional children does create additional expenses. So this will allow for an additional increase to those families with three or more children. Again, it benefits over almost 45,000 households, including 2,400 new households who will have access to this credit, providing them, those households, with an average reduction of over $200. The second change to the working family credit is an increase for all families who are receiving the credit, including those newly eligible under this three or more proposal, with $100 for individuals and head of households, and $200 for those married filing jointly. This increase will help offset the impact of the governor's infrastructure investments through the gas tax changes that are proposed and will be carried in the transportation package. These are important investments in our families across the state of Minnesota, and I believe the committee has heard quite a bit about the working family credit already, but as you know, it is about 12% of Minnesotans across the state, and it is higher certainly in some parts of particularly greater Minnesota. But this is an important tool, and we know that Minnesota families will use this money to help pay for child care expenses, the putting food on their tables, making sure that their children are well taken care of in Minnesota. The next slide shows you the impact of the change of the additional credit for families with three or more children. So the green line is current law, and the blue line shows you the impact of the additional credit for those families. In addition, these same families will see the additional increase of $100 for all households, or $200 for married filing jointly. This proposal for three or more children will increase the threshold starting at about $19,000, and the credit rate will be about 12%. And the phase-out starts at about $27,000, as you can see, and continues to grow and extends that threshold. So those with incomes of about $50,000 will be able to receive this credit. Continuing back, going back to Article 1, focusing on the response to the federal bill, we'll continue with proposals related to farmers and businesses, particularly focus on the 179 tax relief. So this proposal will fully conform to the new changes at the federal level, which expand access to the credit. The federal bill changes the type of property that qualifies, allowing certain improvements to non-residential retail property, such as roofs, heating, and AC systems, to be expensed for the first time. So the budget fully conforms to these new federal changes to the scope, and also eliminates the 80% add-back modification that has frequently been in Minnesota law. The conformity allows businesses to expense up to $1 million of qualifying machinery, equipment, and computer software purchases in the first year that property is placed in service, and increases the phase-out threshold to $2.5 million. So this is a significant expansion at the federal level, and the governor's proposes to conform to these changes. The bill also conforms with bonus depreciation deductions to the scope of the new changes at the federal level, while maintaining the Minnesota 80% add-back modification. So the bonus depreciation for equipment, computer software, and certain improvements to non-residential retail property allow an immediate deduction rather than depreciation over time. The federal bill increased the deduction to 100% of the value of the asset and expands the definition of qualifying property to include certain film, television, and productions and used property for the first time for bonus depreciation. Both of these deductions provide important acceleration of deductions for business, plants, equipment, and other assets placed into service. The deductions can stimulate business investment by reducing the cost of capital and increasing cash flow. By conforming to federal limits, Minnesota also would simplify filing and, importantly, record keeping for these assets over time. In addition, the bill also proposes to repeal the corporate AMT. Minnesota's corporate alternative minimum tax is repealed beginning with tax year 2018. Unused alternative minimum tax credits from prior years can continue to be carried forward for up to 3 years. So Minnesota businesses who operated with the alternative minimum tax in prior years will still be able to use that tax credit going forward. Turning to Minnesota's response to the federal tax bill for businesses, the proposal provides simpler filing and long-term record keeping for businesses by conforming to the federal law for domestic business and foreign income. The federal bill made changes to limit or repeal business deductions and inclusions. For example, it limits net interest deduction to 30% of income for businesses with gross receipts in excess of $25 million. Any disallowed amount of this deduction is allowed as an NOL for carry forward. This base expansion does not apply to businesses with gross receipts under $25 million. Another change provides that it limits business losses in excess of $500,000 for married filing jointly. For businesses with losses over $500,000, that excess amount can be used as a net operating loss in future years. Minnesota's corporate net operating loss deduction is limited to 80% of income with a carry forward. NOLs are the amount by which the taxpayer's current year business deductions exceed its current year gross income. These excesses are carried forward to be used as NOL deductions in future years. And this 80% limitation is similar to the change to limit federal NOLs. The bill also conforms to changes into foreign income and generally provides for inclusion similar to the federal treatment. For example, the one-time transition tax on deemed repatriation income under Section 965 is included in Minnesota income in this proposal. These deemed dividends are allowed a Minnesota dividend received deduction of 80% or 70% depending on ownership or subject to apportionment. Taxpayers will not be required to file their 2017 return regarding this deemed repatriation provision. The governor's bill allows taxpayers to make that payment at the same time as the second installment is due in 2019 under the federal law. The governor's bill also conforms to a global intangible low tax income that was included in the federal bill for U.S. shareholders. These foreign earnings are included in income as an ongoing basis and treated as dividends for purposes of Minnesota's dividend received deduction. And finally, the third category of foreign income includes foreign-derived intangible income for domestic corporations that is derived from export of intangibles and other assets. To the extent that this income is included in the state return, a corresponding dividend received deduction is allowed. And then another provision deals with unrelated business income tax of exempt entities, otherwise known as UBIT. This will require organizations with more than one unrelated trade or business to report income and loss from business separately from other businesses. So, for example, if a nonprofit has other additional business components, they will no longer be allowed to merge those two businesses together, but will separately report those. And so netting income and losses across all businesses is no longer allowed. The governor's bill, however, does not conform with the federal change to require organizations to include in unrelated business income the amount of certain fringe benefit expenses, such as transportation and parking benefits for employees. These amounts can still be excluded from Minnesota for Minnesota purposes. The bill also includes retroactive conformity to a couple of extender provisions that we have seen in the past. As you may recall, the federal provisions are extended through tax year 17. Those include things like tuition deduction, mortgage debt forgiveness, which we know doesn't affect a significant number of taxpayers, but when a taxpayer has this situation, it is certainly a significant tax event for them. And this will help taxpayers who have homes that are foreclosed upon with the bank forgiving a portion of the mortgage debt that the taxpayer owes by excluding that from gross income. Mortgage insurance premiums will allow taxpayers with income below certain thresholds to deduct the cost of premiums on mortgage insurance purchased in connection with the taxpayer's acquisition of a principal residence. It includes a number of depreciation items that were extended through 2017, generally providing the accelerated depreciation through shorter recovery periods. These provisions provide about $20 million in tax relief for Minnesotans. We would also note for the committee that we are watching closely action in Congress because the Senate Finance Committee is considering extenders for tax year 2018. And so if that moves through Congress and becomes law, we will, of course, discuss with the committee whether adding those extenders for tax year 18 would also be an important change to the bill that is moving through this body. Moving back to Article 2, to finish up Article 2, we have this provision also includes changes to the Angel Tax Credit, reinstates that credit and provides $10 million for 2 years. The Angel Tax Credit provides incentive for investors or investment funds to put money into early stage companies focused on high technology and new proprietary technology. The program has issued over $100 million in credit to investors to spur economic growth. The credit is extended again for 2 years. The bill also makes a few policy changes recommended by our colleagues who co-administer this program at Deed to increase credit utilization, particularly to targeted businesses, including businesses owned by people of color and women and businesses located across greater Minnesota. The changes include adjusting the minimum employee compensation requirement and lowering the minimum investment threshold from $10,000 to $7,500 to increase the pool of investors in these targeted businesses. Mr. Chairman and members, we will now move on to Article 3 of the bill, which is the sales and use tax article. As you all, I hope, know and remember from our communication with you this summer, the Supreme Court's decision in Wayfair versus South Dakota expanded the jurisdiction of states to be able to impose its sales tax collection requirements on remote sellers. Supreme Court's decision caused two existing Minnesota laws to become effective, our original sales law and a marketplace provision that was put into effect in 2017. The department announced on July 25th of 2018 that remote sellers and marketplace providers must comply with Minnesota's existing laws no later than October 1st, 2018. We set that date after consultation with many of our business customers around the need to have a little bit of time to get their systems up and running, and also with feedback from many of other companies in Minnesota who wanted to ensure parity with those remote sellers as quickly as possible. So October 1st allowed us for a traditional 90-day notice period, but also importantly made these changes effective for the holiday sales season of 2018. During the implementation process with these customers, the department identified changes to current law that would ease administration and continue to pursue a level of uniformity among states, a tenet of the Wayfair decision, and is important to the state of Minnesota, particularly as we are a member of the Streamlined Sales Tax group of states. So regarding the marketplace providers, the proposal replaces the current law's marketplace provider physical presence requirement with an economic nexus threshold that mirrors current law for retailers and was discussed as an important tenet of the Supreme Court's decision in Wayfair. It requires marketplace providers to file an information report each calendar quarter, and it clarifies that marketplace providers must obtain a sales tax permit for the state. It removes the $10,000 threshold for remote sellers selling into Minnesota solely through a marketplace provider. For remote sellers, the proposal simplifies current Minnesota law by providing that all remote sellers with sales totaling more than $100,000 would be required to collect and remit sales tax. This is a simpler threshold than current law, which has two different tests, either 100 or more retail sales shipped to Minnesota or 10 or more retail sales shipped to Minnesota that total more than $100,000. So again, the proposal would move us to a threshold of remote sellers with more than $100,000 would be required to collect and remit tax. The proposal also adds definitions to clearly define which remote sellers and marketplace providers are subject to Minnesota sales tax jurisdiction and provides remote sellers and marketplaces with 60 days to begin collecting and remitting sales tax after satisfying Minnesota's economic thresholds. and requires remote sellers and marketplace providers to notify the department when they no longer have economic nexus with Minnesota and therefore are not subject to Minnesota's sales tax laws. The next provision in the sales tax article relates to qualified data centers. Currently, under Minnesota law, there is an exemption that provides for an incentive for qualified data centers. There are three types of software that are important to the discussion of sales tax exemptions at qualified data centers or QDCs. First, software that operates the data center equipment. Next, software that manages data at the data center. And third, software with multiple licenses loaded at the data center and distributed by the enterprise. Under current law, software that operates the data center equipment is exempt. Software that manages data is also exempt. Software with multiple licenses loaded at the data center and distributed by the enterprise is not exempt. The bill makes a couple of changes to the current exemption. It first reduces the length of the sales tax exemption on software from 20 to 5 years, and it reduces the sales tax refund for software purchases from 100% to 50%. But going forward in future years, we would include all three types of software, so we would expand the type of software that is eligible for the exemption for the new 50% exemption. The most recent tax expenditure report anticipated that the qualified data center exemption would cost $70 million in fiscal year 2018. The 2018 budget and economic forecast published in December indicated that sales tax refund claims were forecasted to be over $100 million greater than the prior forecast, largely due to qualified data centers. And so the governor's proposal proposes this change to qualified data centers to narrow the scope a bit, and as you will see on the revenue estimate, it will reduce over time the amount that this exemption is worth. It will still be a value of about $70 million to Minnesota businesses, but it does reduce it in these key ways. There are the bill provides for sort of a transition rule that applies these changes to first qualifying purchases after 2019 for the expanded type of software. For entities whose first qualifying purchase was made prior to June 30th of 2019, that exemption is again limited to 5 years, and there is a schedule in the bill of how those transition rules will work for those businesses. The next section of the article relating to sales taxes deals with construction materials tax exemption for local governments and nonprofits on the purchase of construction materials. The provision will allow nonprofits to invest more money into their mission, and local governments will save money and be able to invest in the needs of their community while providing property tax relief for their residents. This simplifies the exemption for building, construction, or reconstruction materials, supplies, and equipment when purchased by a contractor or subcontractor and used in public buildings and public infrastructure projects or used in facilities principally used by nonprofit groups. Under current Minnesota law, local governments are eligible to have their building materials purchased without paying tax, but it requires a contracting requirement. And we have heard feedback from local governments that contracting requirement can be burdensome. And so this proposal makes a change to that. It requires no particular type of contract and will allow for a refund claim regardless of their arrangement with their contractor, so long as those building materials are purchased for that public infrastructure use or used for facilities principally used by nonprofit groups. Mr. Chairman and members, I'm now going to turn it over to Ms. Bears to talk about the property tax division article.
Ms. Bears.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Property tax changes are found in Article 4 of the bill. The bill makes several changes for homeowners. First, the homestead status conveys several benefits to homeowners, including lower tax rates and qualification for the property tax refund. The intent of homestead classification is to recognize that homeowners bring value and stability to cities, schools, and counties. Current law requires taxpayers to have a Social Security number in order to attain homestead status. The governor bill provides greater parity between the individuals with the individual taxpayer identification number, or known as ITIN, and the Social Security number by allowing ITINs to qualify for homestead status. The next is the minimum deed tax. Minimum deed tax threshold is increased from 500 to 3,000 so that more home sales and deed transfers will qualify for the minimum tax. And along with that is the electronic certificate of real estate value. This changes the minimum sale amount from 1,000 to 3,000 to be filed. The next slide is the agricultural homestead market valuation credit clarification. This clarifies calculation of the homestead market value credit for properties that are fractional agricultural homesteads. This change results in prorating the homestead equally between property owners. We have the Senior Citizen Property Tax Deferral Program, which expands to help more seniors pay their property taxes. This change expands eligibility to allow participants who own or occupy their home for 5 years to qualify, instead of the current requirement to occupy or own their home for 15 years. The tax bill also extends the application date to better serve seniors. By moving the deadline from July 1st to November 1st, more seniors may have access to the program at the point in time where they realize they need the deferral. Slide 8 is the riparian buffer credit. And the budget creates a tax credit against property tax to compensate costs of converting land to comply with riparian buffer requirements and ongoing maintenance of buffers. Riparian buffers, or water quality equivalents, were required to many public waters and drainage systems in the 2015 legislature. Landowners can claim an annual property tax credit of $50 per acre of eligible Class 2A land maintained as a riparian buffer for an alternative riparian water quality practice. The credit is first available for taxes payable in 2020, and more than 300,000 acres are estimated to qualify for the credit. This program would be administered in partnership with the Board of Soil and Water Resources, county assessors, and local soil and water conservation districts. Money is appropriated to Bowser in FY20 in order to provide payments to the soil and water conservation districts. Increase to local government aid and county program aid are found in Article 5 of the bill. Historic increase in investments in local government aid and county program aid by $30 million per year, returning them to the 2002 and the 2000s levels. And the investment will help local governments pay for vital needs such as local roads, public safety, while keeping the property taxes low. I'll turn this back to Cynthia now.
Commissioner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. We'll move on to Article 6 of the bill. Article 6 focuses on ensuring that we have the revenue stability moving forward in our state's budget. Our state has been doing well financially. We have restored our credit rating, but all of this is because we have had a history of ensuring that we have budget stability. And as we look to the future forecasts, as Mr. Chairman, you noted, the future forecasts have indicated some compression in our labor market, which also results in slowing economy. I would also note that the forecast identified some risks, including that we are just further from the last recession or slowdown than we are to probably the next. And so we want to make sure that we have a budget that has the long-term stability that we need in Minnesota. The first change related to this is to reinstate the general levy inflator, beginning with taxes payable in 2020. Restoring the levy inflator allows the state general levy to keep pace with increased costs of public services and fund schools, healthcare programs, infrastructure, and other Minnesota priorities. The proposal would treat the state general levy like other tax levies paid by homeowners, which, of course, are reset by their local governments. And historically, those local government, those changes to other property tax levies have historically been made at a higher percentage than the inflator that is applied to this levy. The second change is the estate tax subtraction, and this proposal would eliminate would freeze the estate tax exclusion at $2.7 million, which is this year's current exclusion. Of course, farms and small businesses would still have access to the full $5 million exemption. Freezing the estate tax exemption at its current level will reduce the regressivity of Minnesota's tax code and promote an equal playing field for all taxpayers. And finally, restoring the inflator on cigarettes and tobacco, and then restoring the premium cigar tax is the third element of this proposal. Governor Walz's proposal restores the inflator and the maximum tax on premium cigars to help keep prices pace with inflation to discourage children from smoking and help adult smokers quit. Restoring the inflator and tax on premium cigars raises the cost of cigarettes and tobacco products over time in real dollars, making these items less affordable for our youth who are more price sensitive. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, one issue that we want to make sure that we discuss with this committee is about how do we administer tax year 18 for Minnesota's or customers across Minnesota. As we considered how to move forward with a new bill, we relied on the information that we gathered from our partners in this work, the CPAs, the tax bar, and other tax professionals throughout the interim as we built this this year's filing system. We also took a look at the data about our customers and their choices that they make in filing their taxes. We know that some provisions have impact on more than one tax year for taxpayers. We know that we need to ensure that we help taxpayers get to the right starting point for things like asset basis and asset depreciation. Based on that information, the governor's tax bill balances the fact that the 2018 filing season is well underway with the need to align Minnesota's tax items with federal tax items so that filers do not experience complicated returns in future years. So, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to explain the approach that the bill takes, and then I would ask that I could have Mr. Jeremy Iden, an attorney in our department, to explain the technical provision that is found in the bill.
Thank you very much, Mr. Iden.
So, I'll go ahead. So, first, with respect, I like to think about this with respect to the particular set of customers we're dealing with, because, of course, different customers have very different tax situations. So first, starting with corporate filers, our data tells us that about 60% of corporate filers already use the extended filing date, which is in November of this year. And our conversations with tax professionals indicate that that percentage will likely be much higher this year as they continue to wait for some guidance from the IRS about the federal changes and perhaps wait to see what this session will bring for any tax changes in Minnesota. Accordingly, the bill proposes to conform to the corporate income provisions of the Tax Cut and Jobs Act, the federal level, for tax year 2018. If this were to become law, the department would work over the summer to prepare updated forms and a filing system for use with corporate filers in the fall. And so those corporate filers would be able to file accurately on the extended filing date with the new system. Similarly, the foreign income provisions are conformed for tax year 2018. The majority of this type of income is estimated to be reported on corporate returns. If taxpayers had inclusions of deferred foreign income in 2016 or 2017, the amount would be due on the 2018 return. For individual taxpayers with foreign income, basis in assets and asset depreciation, we know that most individuals in this category have tax attributes that flow from year to year. Most individuals, however, don't have these kinds of tax attributes. And so for individual taxpayers, we know that most individuals have returns and types of income that are self-contained in a single tax year and do not impact future years with items of business loss, income, or depreciation. For example, we have 2.9 million individual returns coming into our system this year that we expect for individual income tax filers. Only about 65,000 of them, or about 2%, for example, have net operating losses that may impact other years. Accordingly, for this 2% and others with tax provisions that do have an impact on more than one tax year, we need to ensure that we help taxpayers get to the right starting point like for things like asset basis and asset depreciation. For this subset of filers, again, individuals with asset basis or depreciation items, changes in the governor's bill are conformed to the federal date of change and will result in an adjustment to 2018 tax year. So taxpayers will be able to take additional deductions, or they may owe for these type of changes that can impact more than one tax year. For example, if your business placed in property and if your business placed property in service in 2018 that is eligible for the new increase in 179 expensing limits, you'll be able to take the deduction along with adjusting the basis of that asset for future years. If you are a taxpayer with change that will affect, if you are a taxpayer with a change that will be effective for 2018, you will not need to file an amended return. The department will work to adjust filed returns and contact taxpayers as necessary to complete the adjustment. This approach allows Minnesotans to rely on their 2018 filing using current 2018 forms and instructions and be able to maintain consistent tracking for state and federal items in future years. For individual taxpayers without foreign income, asset basis, or asset depreciation, those individuals will not need to file amended returns or have any tax change for 2018. To do this, the proposal makes technical conforming changes along with a special adjustment to ensure alignment between federal and state taxes. I'd like to ask Mr. Iden to walk through this provision in this section of the bill and explain that, and then I'll conclude, Mr. Chairman.
Very good. Mr. Iden, welcome. Please state your name and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Jeremy Iden. I'm an attorney with the Minnesota Department of Revenue. I'm going to be going over the proposed new section 290.993, which starts on page 43, line 16. As you've heard, the department is proposing conformity to the federal code for the tax year of 2018. The federal government made many wide-ranging changes to their law that have changed federal taxable income. The goal of this section is to limit the effect of those changes for individuals filing Minnesota returns. What this new section does is take the general conformity we have proposed and adjust the tax due refund at the very end, so although there will be conformity with the federal code, the amount the taxpayers have already paid or received in refund for 2018 will continue to be their outcome. There are some exceptions, but the exceptions are limited to those items that affect depreciation and foreign income provisions. Subdivision A of the section outlines those taxpayers that will be covered, namely individuals and composite partnership taxpayers for the taxable year of 2018. Partnership composite taxpayers are included to treat them the same as their similarly situated regular partnership partners would be treated. Subdivision A1 has an exception for the conformity. The TCJA's increase in the standard deduction and the suspension of the personal exemption. This exception to conformity will make most individual returns, which have already been filed, still correct even with retroactive conformity, and also ensures that for tax year 2018, other items in Minnesota statutes are not affected by the suspension of personal exemptions. An example would be the property tax refund. Subdivision A2 formalizes the ability of taxpayers to make a different election for tax year 2018 between the standard and itemized deductions for federal and state purposes. Subdivision A3 is an automatic adjustment to the amount of tax due if the new change in tax due is directly the result of the law changes between the Internal Revenue Code of December 16th of 2016 and December 31st of 2018, which is the proposed date of Minnesota's new conformity. The result of this is that the amount of taxes the individual has paid when they filed the return does not change, even though the law has changed significantly for tax year 2018. Lastly, Subdivision B has a list of changes done at the federal level, which would allow the change of the amount of Minnesota tax liability of 2018. These items are depreciation items and foreign income items. If a taxpayer has utilized one of these listed items in 2018, and the list is labeled on page 4 of the summary, the amount of their tax due will change. Examples of these items that may change the taxpayer's tax liability are 179 expensing, the limit to real property for like-kind exchanges, and the bonus depreciation expansion. Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner Bowerly.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. As Mr. Iden indicated, the proposal includes this technical conforming change along with the special adjustment to ensure that Minnesotans can rely on the taxes that they are filing right now and will file through April 15th. And to accomplish this, the proposal updates Minnesota's net income to match federal taxable federal taxable income in tax year 2018 and simultaneously creates this limited special adjustment that will result in no additional tax refund or liability for nearly all Minnesotans. In contrast, for those Minnesotans who have either corporate income, we are proposing full retroactive conformity to 2018, and for other business activity income that particularly related to foreign income or depreciation items, this proposes retroactive conformity to 18 as well. We built this proposal with, like I said, the input and the assistance of a number of from the information we gathered throughout the summer. We have met with CPAs to gather their they provided valuable insight, and we look forward to continuing to work with the tax professionals who care deeply about how we administer tax year 18. I also want to thank Mr. Williams and Mr. Klayman for discussing this proposal with us, and we look forward to working with the committee and anyone interested in how to make sure that we make tax year 2018 as simple as possible for Minnesota taxpayers. So, Mr. Chairman, I want to thank you and the committee for time to talk about the governor's budget. The tax bill is a key component of the budget that will ensure that we can make the needed investments across healthcare, education, and communities to ensure prosperity for all Minnesotans. We'd be happy to answer any questions.
Commissioner, thank you for your presentation. And so at this time, members, questions, comments? Chair Davids.
Well, thank you, Chair Marquardt. This question is for the commissioner. We realize that the median income in Minnesota is about $70,000. So you have a couple, let's say, living in Plymouth with two kids, driving to work in St. Paul. The question would be, will the governor's budget include, including the gas tax and the sick tax, increase or decrease their taxes? We know it's a massive increase. But for that couple in Plymouth, median income, what does this bill do for them?
Commissioner Bowerly.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Davids, that couple in Plymouth and their children will be the beneficiaries of a strong education system. Their commute to St. Paul will be benefited by roads and bridges that are safe and efficient for them to travel on, and they will be benefiting from all of the other investments that this bill makes, including in their local governments and their county governments with local government and CPA.
Chair Davids.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and that didn't really answer my question. The question is, what's in this bill for them? What's in this bill for them is massive tax increases. Their pocketbook, their balance sheet goes down because of this bill. Let's say we have a medium-income couple that has no kids going to school. I know it's a village and takes a village and all that. I get that. But, again, name one thing other than all this stuff that the couple in Plymouth gets out of this tax bill other than massive tax increases.
Commissioner Bauer.
Mr. Chair and Representative Davids, so that couple in Plymouth will be the beneficiaries of lower property taxes because their county and their local government will be receiving additional local government and county program aid, which will help reduce their property taxes.
Davids.
Mr. Chairman, that couple in Plymouth doesn't get any LGA. So what they have is massive tax increases. Their balance sheet goes down because of this tax bill. They don't get anything for their property tax because of LGA because they don't get any. And also, LGA does not, it's not necessarily, it doesn't correlate with property taxes going down. We've seen that many times. I learned that one the hard way when I was first tax chair. We put a bunch of money into LGA and property taxes went up massively. And so there's not a direct correlation for that. So that poor couple in Plymouth is going to have quite a time with this budget. But I'm not too worried. To the folks in Plymouth, don't worry. Help is on the way. This isn't going to become, it will not become the law, but we will certainly listen to the great ideas of Governor Walz.
Representative Lesh.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Commissioner Bowerly, for your explanation of bringing this forward. I was thinking, while Chair Davids was speaking about that couple in Plymouth, I didn't grow up in Plymouth, but I grew up in Brooklyn Park. And I remember from the time that I was 3 years old until the time that I graduated from high school, my dad worked at Toro in Bloomington. Now, I remember, I thought that was crazy, drive to Bloomington to go to your job every morning and come back. And at the time, it was 25 minutes you could get from Brooklyn Park to Bloomington, right there, that Toro off of Lindale and just south of 494 there. I don't know what the cross street is. I remember that was a long time, but he was still able to make it back to play catch with us, to have dinner. There is no way you can make that drive today in the morning or at night in 25 minutes. Not a chance. You're looking at maybe hour 15, maybe more with rush hour traffic, with the increase in cars. So I think that fixing of our roads and bridges and reducing that traffic burden does a lot for families in Plymouth. It allows them to play catch with their kids out in the yard before dinner, or help them with homework. Time not spent in the car, time spent with your family, is time well spent. That's just one example, and I think extends to, you know, extension of the provider tax too. Now, I've stated in this committee before that I'm generally adverse to regressive taxes. I am. That'll always be the case. That's the proposal on the table now. But until this legislature gets the courage to undo the ongoing damage from those income tax cuts from 20 years ago now, that's going to be the only game in town, will be those two proposals. And I hope that in future years we do find the courage again to make sure that the rich pay their fair share, and that folks like my family, growing up in Brooklyn Park in the 1970s and 80s, actually have a chance to get ahead. But we can't do that with an ongoing system. That said, I think that the proposal we see before us is the best one we got going, and I appreciate Governor Wallace and you putting it forward. Thank you.
Commissioner Bowerly.
Thank you, Representative Lesh. And if I could, Mr. Chairman and Representative Davids, I want to make sure I understood your scenario. If the couple in Plymouth is driving to their jobs in St. Paul, there's nothing in this bill that would provide a tax increase for them. For wage earners, we are going to be maintaining Minnesota's tax system. For individuals, for those standard deduction, the personal exemptions, which provide valuable benefits to Minnesota families. The conformity-based broadeners with related to business activity income. So if, again, some of the examples are, so excessive, one of the base broadeners is excessive compensation for executives. So we are conforming to that proposal. That will raise revenue. Those are related largely to corporate income or business activity income. So I just wanted to clarify my response to Representative Davids, make sure I understood your example of the couple from Plymouth.
Chair Davids.
Well, thank you. The couple in Plymouth does get hit pretty hard in this budget with tax increases, because the Department of Revenue said the business tax is a tax on consumer and laborers, and that's increased here. So my couple in Plymouth does get hit pretty hard here with tax increases. And, well, yeah, I'll leave it at that.
Commissioner Bowerly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Marquardt. I'm sorry. I had a flashback to last year. Chair Marquardt, and I'm just going to say, if I might, Chair Marquardt and Chair Davids, that might help me just keep it straight. Current literature and the research the research division approach to how we understand the impact of corporate tax changes currently does indicate that those are passed on to consumers and to laborers. There is research being done right now, and I would expect in a few years we have more research available to really understand current corporate behavior, which has clearly changed over time. time. The tax changes that were made at the federal level did not result in the wage increases that we anticipated. Even the forecast has made some adjustments to account for that. Instead, those corporations, bought back stock, which increased their corporate income, but did not make significant changes to consumer products or to their wages. Chair Marquardt and Chair Davids, you are correct that that is the current understanding of corporate tax behavior, although I will note that there is significant research underway, and then when that literature has matured, we will make sure we bring it to this body as well.
Representative McDonald.
Mr. Chair, in addition to the $7 billion increase in the next 4 years in regards to congestion, even some folks in my district had said to me that they could support a tax increase on gas if it all went to roads and bridges and relieved congestion. Now, we did the analysis, and it does hardly any of that at all, and that's the shame. I will never support a 20-cent gas tax. You know, out of the 20-cent gas tax that Governor Wells is proposing, only 10 cents of that goes towards roads and bridges, and only 3 cents of that goes to relieve congestion. I agree with the representative over there with the fine-looking suit that it is best that our families, our moms, our dads, our brothers and sisters are home as soon as they can to get to their businesses so they can labor and earn money and get back to their homes or their communities, because that is what's best. The family is the nucleus. That is what we should uphold. And being caught in congestion does reduce that. So 3 cents of this 20 cents goes to congestion. Minnesota, and those in the room, I hope you're listening, call the governor and tell him that you reject that. The congestion is the worst I've seen in 9 years driving down to the Capitol, and seriously has one considering whether or not I want to carry on this position in a two-hour commute. 2 hours, and if it even barely even rains, let alone snows. So 3 cents for relieving congestion, hogwash. The Republicans had a great bill a couple of years ago that funded the biggest increase in transportation funding in the history of the state of Minnesota. And does it fix everything? No. No amount of money will. But it does fix and maintain our roads and bridges that we trust our loved ones to travel. That does that. But the Governor Wells' gas tax does not. And for that, I reject that. And it's a shame. It's just a shame is what it is, not to mention $7 billion increase in taxes on families and businesses. It's a shame. There are some good things that he does. I agree, Commissioner Bowerly, thank you for sharing that. Some of those ideas were in our tax bill a couple of years ago, but you didn't even address the taxes on the transportation. I'm sure that'll come, Mr. Chair, in another day, and we can continue this fine argument that it does no good at all. It'll just take people's money out of their pocket, out of their families, and not really solve the problem of congestion.
Representative Becker Fitton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm actually going to take us in a totally different provision. There's a lot of good things in the bill, but one thing I'm actually concerned about is the angel tax credit and the lowering the minimum employee compensation requirements for minority-owned and women-owned businesses. And, I think the idea of the angel investor tax credit is not that we would encourage new jobs that are then not paying people enough to get by, and we talk about families and the impacts on individuals. So I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit to that, Commissioner, and where that specific part of the proposal came from.
Commissioner.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Becker-Finn, these policy provisions are sourced in the feedback that our colleagues at DEED, as they administer and certify this program, and working with individual businesses, and particularly their experience in working with businesses in greater Minnesota, working with businesses that are owned by people of color, owned by Natives. Their feedback was that it is for two changes resulted from that feedback. One is to lower the minimum threshold, the investment amount, right? So the investment was threshold was $10,000 for these targeted businesses. It's now moving to $7,500. And the other change was to make an adjustment to the minimum wage component that was in there. So we can gather more of that information and follow up with you, but that is where that that feedback came from the businesses who were trying to take advantage of this program, but for those particular reasons weren't able to access the program. So we can certainly provide more information and perhaps follow up with our DEET colleagues as well.
Representative Becker-Finn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I would just encourage, as we're looking at all these provisions, to, you know, I know there are different theories of the way that supporting businesses might directly impact families, but, you know, specifically, so it's line, it's page 55 where this provision is. And the poverty guideline for a family of four is only $25,750, and 175% of that is only $45,000. So, you know, if the business isn't able to support its employees well, then, I, you know, maybe they don't need to get a tax credit for it if it isn't, you know, if we're just perpetuating their employees remaining in poverty. I don't know that that is actually moving us in the direction that we want to go, as much as they might want to take advantage of of the tax credit for the business's benefit. So just, you know, and if the feedback is about greater Minnesota, then I don't know why we're lowering the wages for minority and women-owned businesses, too, because those may as well, I mean, maybe in Minneapolis or St. Paul or places where there's no real reason we need to do that. So happy to talk further, you know, once you're able to get that information. Thank you.
Chair Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to the gentleman in the probably the coolest suit I've ever seen. He just left.
You know,
and I didn't mention his name.
You know, yes, and you notice I've gone to the corollary, of course, the names, and I went to if a city was mentioned, but I have not extended that to a title. So that's why I did not call on Representative Lesch. I haven't promoted.
Mr. Chairman, to Representative Lesch.
drive time between Brooklyn Park and Toro and Bloomington right now is 29 minutes, just for the record.
Very good. Representative Les Legard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Commissioner Bowerly, and thank you to the governor for bringing forward all these different provisions. And my favorite, to be honest with you, is local government aid. Coming from greater Minnesota and coming from small cities, I fully understand the importance of this and how it helps. And it's not just to keep the taxes down, although that's a big part of it. It really helped small communities that doesn't have the resources to be able to provide the necessary services to their citizens. And these are core services. So I can't thank you enough. And I know that we have around this table here, we have a lot of individuals that understand the importance of local government aid and what it means to this state. So thank you.
Representative Walsh.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And back to the Plymouth family, you know, one of the things that I think we have to worry about is the full support for those families. And when we took hundreds of millions of dollars out of the general fund to fund transportation and roads, which was the past approach, we ended up with large class sizes in our schools. We ended up with some of the highest tuition rates in the nation, which would force that family, if their kids are not yet in college, to have to figure out how to save even more. We ended up with huge waiting lists for many public services, including child care and other programs that many families rely on. And we ended up with infrastructure that quite honestly puts people at risk. And I happen to have a lot of bridges in my district, and I have three times had bridges closed for long periods of time because they have been unsafe to drive across. And that is a huge problem for connecting communities, getting people to their jobs, creates tremendous bottlenecks. But thankfully, we closed those because I also served in this body when the 35W bridge went down. And we can't ever afford that, and I'd rather have those bridges closed. But we need to maintain them. And already I'm getting complaints about the potholes that have already emerged with the tough winter that we've had now. And I don't think Minnesotans want us to continue to let the potholes sit there for the next year or two. And the modest increase in the gas tax with the increased investments that will enable in the general fund, in education, in other areas, and everyone benefits by county program aid. Everyone lives in a county. And that is going to allow those kinds of services that are going to help them. Maybe they have an elderly parent who needs assistance from the county. Maybe they've been exposed to an infectious disease and public health is going to step up to make sure that an outbreak doesn't close down their elementary school that their children are at. Because of those kind of services we're investing in this budget, I think that family in Plymouth is going to get a pretty good deal going, not only now, but going into the future in terms of improved education for their children.
We have Commissioner Bowerly here for 10 more minutes today. So if you have a question for, and, you know, if it spills into moral for comments, that's fine, but I want to make sure if there's questions for Commissioner Bowerly that we get to that before she has to go. So, Chair Davis.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I would ask Commissioner Bowerly and Representative Loeffler, first of all, with Representative Loeffler, what we did was we actually put money into transportation to fix roads and bridges, and we gave the largest increases to K-12 education ever. So I'm not sure what somebody's referring to, that because we funded transportation that we didn't fund education. That's not correct. But to Representative, I guess, Commissioner Bowerly, and then to Representative Loeffler, is this budget a tax increase on middle-class families, yes or no?
Commissioner Bowerly.
Mr. Chair and Chair Davids, this bill does not increase taxes, income taxes on middle-class families. There will be increases that help us pay for investments in roads and bridges with the gas tax, and we will continue to pay for essential health care services only if we extend the provider tax. So, Mr. Chairman, yes, some taxes are increased. There are not individual income tax increases on middle-class families.
Well, Chair Davis. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I didn't ask if there's income tax increases. I asked if there is increases, tax increases on middle-class families, and I think we all know the answer is yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Well, Commissioner Barlow, remember, this tax bill does not have the gas tax. This tax bill doesn't have the gas tax or anything on the provider tax in this bill. Representative Loeffler.
Well, just since I think for the record, as I recall, it was about a 2% increase that the schools got, which wasn't even inflation. And the original House proposal was 1%. So I'd say, and the budget that's before us from Governor Walz is a 3% and 2% increase in K-12 education. So I think there's, education has always been a value, but when it doesn't even get an inflationary increase, I think that we're not really stepping up for our kids.
Representative Slavinsky.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just from the LGA money, Representative Listigard mentioned that. Is there provision, I didn't catch it myself when I was looking through the bill, that equates to, you know, to receive LGA, that you'll actually see a lowering of local property taxes as part of kind of that, you know, so that you're essentially buying down local, is that kind of written in the bill or not?
Commissioner Bowerly.
Chair Marquardt and Representative, there are no levy limits in the microphone. There are no levy limits proposed in the bill. You will observe in the revenue estimate that there are interactions with property taxes that are made as a part of the estimation process of the bill. There is a corollary between increased local government aid and county program aid and reduced property taxes.
All right.
Representative Slavinsky.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just was, you know, it was mentioned, Mr. Chair, sorry. So I just wanted to clarify when you said folks were saying that it was going to just absolutely lower taxes. I thought maybe there was a levy limit in the bill, but obviously there's not. So thank you.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I have a few concerns of the bill. Not only is it incredibly regressive, but I also have a concern now. This is the first time I've been on the tax committee, so I'm not quite sure if I've noticed this before. I've been in the legislature 7 years, but on slide 26, it looks to me like we are now giving the homestead credit to non-citizens. Have we ever done that in the state of Minnesota before, where non-U.S. citizens will be getting now the homestead credit? Homestead status.
Commissioner Bowerly.
Mr. Chairman and Representative, yes, there are, I'm guessing there are non-U.S. citizens who have Social Security numbers who have homestead credits right now.
I believe, Mr. Chair.
Representative O'Neill.
If I understand correctly, the ITIN is for non-citizens who do not qualify for the Social Security number. And I'm just curious because across the board in every committee that I'm on six different committees, there's been a movement afoot to give special conditions and kind of equality to people that aren't even U.S. citizens. And I'm just finding this very curious because here it is again, where someone that's not a U.S. citizen is getting the homestead status and a tax credit. So I don't think that we've done that here in Minnesota before. Maybe there's been attempts, but I think that's new. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Commissioner Bowerly.
Mr. Chair and Representative O'Neill, individuals with ITINs are, those are individual tax identification numbers that are issued by the IRS. So an individual who has an ITIN has requested that in order to be able to pay taxes to the federal government and to Minnesota. Is my understanding, and we can certainly follow up on this because I am not an immigration law expert, but it's my understanding that Social Security numbers are available to individuals who have certain types of immigration status, but not all of them. So they may not, I don't know that you need to be a citizen to receive a Social Security number, and as opposed to having certain types, there are different delineations for certain types of immigration status. But I'd be happy to follow up with you on that. This proposal was before the body last year. I don't know about the other proposals that you're hearing in other committees, but this proposal has been in front of the committee in the most recent year. So we can certainly follow up with you on the difference between ITINs and Social Security numbers and the statuses that accompany those.
Representative O'Neill.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'm pretty sure that if you are a U.S. citizen, you are eligible for a Social Security number.
Yeah,
absolutely. And an ITIN is for someone who does not qualify for a Social Security number, and thereby, you know, 1 + 1 = 2. That means they are non-citizens, and so now we're giving non-citizens the homestead market value credit. So I just have concerns because every single committee I sit on, it seems that we are giving non-citizens privileges that citizens have, and I see it again here, and I'm just very concerned.
Representative Davids.
Pass, Mr. Chair.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Interested in the conversation about LGA. With regards to that, the lion's share of LGA goes to some cities of the first class, and I recognize that in some cases it's important for a lot of rural cities. I've had frustrations with LGA over the years because I see the formulas being very complicated, and as all things, we've talked about this before, picks winners and losers, you might say. I applaud the counties. You know, they went a few years ago and reformed the county program aid formula, and I think that actually did some real good. I would like to see the cities sit down and try to make some reforms to the LGA formula. In my hometown, for example, I think 6 or 7% of their total budget comes from LGA. And others, it's substantially larger than that. So I would like to see some reforms come forward in the LGA formula. I know it's very complicated, and it probably won't happen, but I think that's something that we should shoot for. But Commissioner Bowerly, thank you for being here. Minnesota is generally referred to as one of the least tax-friendly states in the nation, if not the most unfriendly state. Will this, when it comes to preparing taxes and so forth, is this going to simplify the tax code to make it easier for a small business owner on Main Street in Greenbush, Minnesota, or is it going to be more complicated?
Commissioner Bowerly, since Representative Fabian's the last on the list, do you have a follow-up question to this? Otherwise, I was going to allow her to make her. Okay, if you could answer this.
Sure.
Well, okay, very good. So if you could answer this question, also make your final comments all at once, if you could. So,
thank you, Mr. Chairman and Representative Fabian. So when we conform to the federal law, particularly for business activity income, that will make it far simpler for businesses in Minnesota to be able to file their taxes, because they will be, our tax code will again be aligned to the federal government's code. We'd happy to follow up in more detail if you'd like, but this will make it easier for them to file taxes. Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. I know we're at our time, so I'll be very brief, but I want to thank you, Mr. Chairman, for authoring this bill and allowing us the time to present it to the committee today. This tax bill is a component of the governor's budget, which focuses on education, health care, and community prosperity, and we've talked about a number of important areas, particularly around community prosperity today. Local government aid and county program aid are critical to local governments being able to provide the services that Minnesotans rely on them to provide across the state, and so that is core to our communities being prosperous and being able to support the needs. Also, you know, the important investments that this budget makes across the state, including in child care, broadband, and housing, are essential to our future economic success in Minnesota. So this tax bill not only deals with the significant changes at the federal tax, at the federal law level, by preserving Minnesota's individual income tax system and the benefits, including important itemized deductions, particularly unreimbursed employer expenses for Minnesotans across the state. It provides tax simplicity for businesses and corporations by conforming to those changes that were made at the federal level, and also provides tax relief in the form of 179 depreciation. It provides tax cut for seniors and their Social Security income, and provides important investments, $100 million, in our working families across the state of Minnesota. So this bill, the governor's priority with this tax bill was really Minnesota's families across the state, families that were frequently left out by the federal law changes, and so really takes a different approach and prioritizes Minnesota's working families all across the state of Minnesota, and supports the investments that we need to make in our whole budget to ensure that we have an excellent, continue to have an excellent education system, that we have an infrastructure system to support our commerce, both in hard infrastructure like roads and bridges, and also in broadband, to ensure that we can be a thriving economy as we move forward. So we look forward to continuing the conversation with all of you as we move through session. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I want to thank Governor Walz and you, Commissioner, for bringing this bill forward. And I will renew my motion to lay over House File 2125 as amended. So, members, thank you. Commissioner, thank you. Tomorrow, testimony and further comments if need be, and into the next day also. So we are adjourned.